very much. So I hope this is an opportunity. Everybody's very, very busy, certainly before Yartif, to help us focus a little bit during Elul for the upcoming Yom Neiram. And then we'll have other opportunities as well next week, and then Shabbos, to help us prepare. The Gemara says, in the middle of Masechta Zvei, the Gemara says that on Rosh Hashanah, the Ribbono Shel Olam determines the Parnasa for the entire year. The Gemara says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu determines what we will earn, with the exception of Hotzos, Shabbos, and Yom Tov. When it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, so a person, whatever we spend in Shabbos and Yom Tov within reason, whatever we spend in Shabbos and Yom Tov within our basic spending pattern, it's a little bit more for Shabbos and Yom Tov, so that is above the budget. And that Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's not determined in Rosh Hashanah, that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives back well beyond what he determined in Rosh Hashanah. So Rashi over there says that therefore one should be careful when one is spending through the course of the year. One should be careful because you don't know what your budget is. So if a person overspends during Kislev or Teves or Shvat, one could come at the end of Elul and have a shortfall because that wasn't part of the din. So one of our Rebbeim said that the good news is that at this point of the year, only a week to go, so you have many shopping days left, because now we basically know, and if you're nervous, you wait till next week, but basically we know what Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us for the, let us see through this year. So whatever budget we have, so now is a good time to spend, until Rosh Hashanah comes in, so that'll still be in last year's cheshbon, which apparently was already given to us. That's the first good news that I wanted to open up the shiur with, that as many days as there are ready for to get ourselves ready, so those are also good days to think about what one needs to get ready for Yom Tov and otherwise as well. One of the important ideas of Rosh Hashanah, which is important for everybody, but I think is very relevant for women, is that Rosh Hashanah points out to us that there is tefillah, there is davening, which goes on well beyond the formal act of davening itself. Well beyond what happens in the siddur or the machzor, there's much more tefillah going on. And we see this from two important sources. One is for the din deoraisa of shofar. Shofar is really a form of tefillah. Right? That's the Rav publicized this idea in many shiurim. But the idea was developed over the last few hundred years that if you look at the Gemaras, you see that shofar, the sounding of the tones, is a form of davening to Ribbono Shel Olam. And the proof that we bring, the strongest proof, is that the mitzvah of shofar is wrapped around the mitzvah of davening. In other words, that the primary mitzvah of shofar, and the way it was originally developed, the way originally Chazal established the mitzvah deoraisa, the mitzvah of Torah is to sound the shofar. Chazal said, we're going to wrap the shofar around the themes of Malchus, Shofar, and Zechronos. And originally, our musaf used to be shacharis. We used to blow shofar during shacharis. So why would we leave a mitzvah till musaf? We used to grab the mitzvah as soon as we could. We wouldn't blow shofar in the first 3 hours of the day, because al pi kabbalah, the shofar is such a powerful tefillah, so we wanted to, it's better to wait, and better to, everybody should do it at the same time. But originally, shofar was sounded during shacharis. And then during the Roman times, the Romans forbade us from blowing shofar, and they used to appoint Roman guards next to every shul. Probably they thought that it was some kind of call to rebel. And then, in order to be able, so that we couldn't blow shofar during shacharis. However, sometime after, when the Romans were convinced that we were dominating and dominating, so that we weren't rebelling, so the Roman guards left. When the Roman guards left, then we were able to blow shofar, and that was really musaf time. So we changed our musaf, and our musaf used to be a Yom Tov Tik musaf, and it became Malchus, Achronos, and Shofars. And that's why we blow shofar on primarily during the Shemona Esrei. We blow it during the public Shemona Esrei. Now, so Sfarad blows it during the private and the public Shemona Esrei. And because we didn't want to wait so long, so we ended up blowing an extra 30 tones before the Shemoneh Esrei, and that has become now the way in which we perform the mitzvah day rice as soon as we can. So the fact that Chazal took this mitzvah, there are very few, if any, mitzvahs that Chazal take and wrap around davening, because most mitzvahs are entirely separate from davening. There are a few mitzvahs which are a form of davening. Lulav and Esrog is a form of giving thanks to Ribbono Shel Olam, so we take it during Hallel. And the shofar is a form of davening, so Chazal said it makes sense to actually introduce it into the Shemoneh Esrei, the same way as Birchas Kohanim is a form of davening, it's introduced into the Shemoneh Esrei. But otherwise we don't take mitzvahs and introduce them into davening. Another proof is that the shofar itself is bent. Why is the shofar bent? So the Gemara explains, because during davening we are kofof, during davening we feel lowered and humbled by all the things that we have to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam. So you see from these and other sources that shofar is a form of davening. So you see an interesting idea that davening goes well beyond a verbal expression, a verbal discussion with Ribbono Shel Olam. Minhag Yisrael picked up on this, because Minhag Yisrael took the simanim Rosh Hashanah night, when we take honey or an apple, different simon that we take, and we hear mispalo then that we should have a sweet year, that the year should be one that is the rosh, will is a nub. So why do we take the apple? Why do we take the head of the fish or the head of the ram? Why do we take the honey? All of these things, and that's when the Meiri points out that it's very important to say Yirasomavdeyavinushvashemayim. The Meiri writes that that's really what makes the difference between taking the apple, taking the honey, and nichosh, and doing some magic. If we would just take the honey and eat the honey on its own, that would look like nichosh. We're doing some kind of magic because we eat honey, it's going to be a sweet year. But what we're really saying is we're davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there are two ways of davening. There's davening verbally, and there's another way of davening. We can sometimes daven through our actions as well. That's the idea of Simona Milsa. Al Pi Kabbalah, we explain that the idea is that if we do something in this world which is already sweet, so that creates, the way that the Kabbalah discusses it, it creates a keli. It creates a tool, a crucible, through which the Ribbono Shel Olam then can give his bracha. The way I understand this, the rational understanding of what's a much greater and larger idea, is that that is very much our role when we dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam. When we dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're not just saying to Ribbono Shel Olam, please give us good health. We're challenging ourselves to do whatever we can to be healthy, and then asking Kodesh Baruch Hu to bless our efforts. We create a keli, we try to maintain good health, and we ask Kodesh Baruch Hu, now we do what we could do. When we ask for das, so we're saying to Ribbono Shel Olam, we are creating the keli, we're trying very hard to understand things, to study things, put time aside. Now Kodesh Baruch Hu, give us insight and understanding. Parnasa, Baruch Aleinu. We're saying to Ribbono Shel Olam, we're trying to earn a parnasa. We're creating the keli, and then a Kodesh Baruch Hu then blesses the keli. Same thing with being sweet. So we say to Ribbono Shel Olam, we're going to try to be sweet. We're going to try to be, if a person is a misanthrope, a person is a person who's cantankerous and difficult, so I imagine he can't hope to have a sweet year by having a little of honey. But when he has the honey at the beginning of the year, he's really challenging himself. Before I ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu for sweetness, for sweet relationships, for a sweet approach to Avodas Hashem, so I have to make sure that I'm doing what I can do, because my job is to create kelim, to create crucibles and tools with which the Kodesh Baruch Hu will now give us the bracha. But when I create a keli for Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's also a form of davening. So that's, I think, an important idea to keep in mind, that davening is not only a verbal discussion of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but our actions, our activities can often be forms of davening as well. Tashlof, to some extent, is again, is a minhag Yisrael, which picked up in this idea to remind us that sometimes their actions are also a form of davening. So this is, I think, a very important idea which we mention every so often around Yom Neirom time, that sometimes, particularly women who are at home raising young children, or who have to schedule their davening times around the tipul of young children, and or even older children, that doesn't mean that the day is not a day of davening. A person can be involved with one's children, and that can be a form of davening. A person can be involved in taking care of the great gifts and challenges that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us, and that is what we say, "Va'anit tefilu l'cho Hashem." It's Ratzon what we are, what we do, that's a form of davening. So we can turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're working with the kelim that you gave us. We're preparing kelim for your bracha, for your bracha of Yerushalayim, for your bracha of good health. And that is a form of davening. And that's an important thing to keep in mind as we enter this, as we're really in the middle already of these days of davening. The mitzvah of tkiyah shofar itself is an asei shezman grama. So therefore, since it's a positive time-down mitzvah, women are free from fulfilling the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. Midin deiraisa. However, shofar is one of those mitzvahs that all the mitzvahs that are asei shezman grama, most of them, women can adopt as a practice, and as you know, that's true for many, many mitzvahs. When it comes to shofar, so there, women have been much more aggressive than is halachically required, and therefore there are some mechayonim rites that nashim mechmir al atzman v'kiblu kechova. That shofar is one of those mitzvahs that women have been very aggressive about and have accepted upon themselves as if it would actually be obligatory. And that has become the practice of Klal Yisrael. It's become our practice, as is evidenced by trying to have tkiyah shofar provided for women, certainly after davening. It's evidenced by if a woman would not be able to make it to shul, then the common practice is to blow shofar for a woman. So even though clearly midin deiraisa, it is not incumbent upon women, but the practice has become that the women have been aggressive about it, they've pursued it, and they've accepted it upon themselves, and therefore we respond in the same way. Klal Yisrael appreciates it to be almost like a chova, right? So that on one hand that means that a woman, if the standards of how far she has to push herself are less than men. On the other hand, the practice of Klal Yisrael has been to try very hard. How many sounds must a woman hear? So that's the halacha, is that only 30 kolos. When I say only 30 kolos, we have, as far as the Torah is concerned, it's important to review this, as far as the Torah is concerned, we fulfill the mitzvah of shofar by sounding 9 kolos. Tekiyah, true, tekiyah, 3 times. That would be the mitzvah day raisa. We have, in the time of the Gemara already, it's a fascinating study, that in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah, they already did not know exactly what a truah was. They knew that a tekiyah was a strong sound, and we knew that a truah was a mournful or a crying tone. But exactly how was it, whether it was a weeping tone, or whether it was a moaning, groaning tone, whether it was daiga, the tone of a person who was worried and aggravated, or was a person who was already overcome with aggravation and weeping, that was a machlokas. Right? And because it was a machlokas, therefore we've adopted all forms. We do the bleating sound of the, what we call a trua. We do the groaning sound of the shvarim, and we even do a shvarim which leads into a bleating sound. Because very often a person will be very aggravated and be worried and worried and worried and then break down and cry. The reverse it doesn't happen. Right? A person does not cry, and then figure out why they're crying. Usually that doesn't happen. Usually a person has daigas, has concern, has problems, and then it breaks down into a true sound. So we do everything. That's how 9 kolos, 9 tones, became 30 tones. And that's how we fulfill the mitzvah deiraisa. Why is it that on Rosh Hashanah we all of a sudden do all the chumras? That's not really the way we usually do halacha. Usually halacha, we make a decision. We figure out what's the consensus. So I would suggest 2 possible approaches. That if there are 2 themes in shofar. One theme in shofar is davening. And Hasidim used to say that how is shofar davening? Shofar is davening because it comes to a point where a person is not really sure what to ask for. Comes to a point, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you have a moment of Yom HaDin standing in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Hasidim say, if a person is lost, person, as he gets deeper and deeper in the forest, his cries for help become less articulate. Right? When he's in the borders of the forest, so he thinks somebody will have to find him, so he'll scream, "Help, and I'm over here, and maybe you can find me." But once he gets deeper and deeper in the forest, he realizes no one's going to hear detailed instructions of where he is. They're only going to hear that there's somebody out there screaming and crying. So the Hasidim say that on Rosh Hashanah, we stand in front of the Rebbeinu Shalom, we have the entire year in front of us. We're asking the Rebbeinu Shalom that what's going on in our minds are multitudes of different bakashos. We're not really sure what to say first, what to say second, so we just scream out. That's the shofar. So we have a general rule that whenever there are different forms of davening, that's the one time when we're machmir and we say all forms of davening. For example, in the morning we say emes v'yatsiv, and then we say emes v'amuna. And we say avas olam and avar rabba. We say modem, two forms of modem. One we say when we're davening privately, and we say when we're davening publicly. Why do we have all these different forms? These are all different forms of davening. When it came to davening, there seems to be an approach in Chazal, whatever you can say, say. It's hard to make decisions exactly what to say to the Rebbeinu Shalom. So we try to put it in different places. And the other approach is that the other theme of blowing shofar is announcing Malchus Shemayim, the trumpets of the guards. So we say, Vahi Bishur Melech V'Saseh Rashiyam. When is the Kodesh Baruch Hu king? When everybody gets together. So if it's a pretty sad coronation, if you're trying to coronate the king, and every little group blows the trumpets in a different way. So Klal Yisrael said, now this is the one time we all have to blow the same trumpet in order to coronate the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So whatever it is, we've developed this approach that we blow all possible tones, and that's where we have 30 kolos, and that's the obligation that a person has to fulfill. We blow another 30 kolos in order to intertwine the shofar with the davening. Alright, so the mitzvah de raisa is the mitzvah in HaTorah, the biblical mitzvah we fulfill right after Kriyas HaTorah, make the bracha, fulfill the mitzvah, and the first 30 kolos that a person hears, that's the mitzvah de raisa. In the time of the Mishnah, this was said during Shacharis. It was said in the best possible way. It was said, Malchias, blow shofar. Zichronos, blow shofar. Shofars, blow shofar. And then, as we said, when the Romans came and stopped us from doing that, we had to do it in a compromised way. We just blew shofar straight, and then, to make up for the best way to blow shofar, we blow shofar around Tfilas Musaf. So, if a person comes to shul, so we blow 30 kolos right before Musaf, that's the mitzvah de'iraisa. And then we do derabbanan and mitzvahs by blowing shofar during the davening. And then there's a minute which is very hard to understand, to blow another 60 tones afterward, to have ultimately 100 tones, which some are related to Sisera's mother. It's a very difficult notion that Sisera's mother cried 100 times and therefore we sound 100 kolos. But that's a minute that certainly, if one is not in shul, or certainly for women, we would not pursue that. We would try to blow 30 kolos, tekiya, truah, tekiya, tekiya, shvarim, tekiya, and tekiya, shvarim, truah, tekiya, each one 3 times. In addition, when it comes to eating before tekiyas, So we also are more lenient than women. And if a woman feels in any way a little bit weak, then she should eat before tekiyas. We don't. We men do not eat before tekiyas because we shouldn't eat before doing a mitzvah, before any mitzvah. But the post can point out that when women accepted upon themselves the practice of listening to tekiyos, so they accepted it in a more comfortable way. They didn't accept it with all the strict halachas that men have that we wouldn't even eat before. So if a woman is in any way weak, so because any kind of weakness, they should eat even before tekiyas. The musaf of Rosh Hashanah also is an interesting question. Are women obligated in the musaf of Rosh Hashanah? We normally say that women are obligated to daven shacharis and daven mincha. That's our general approach. What about musaf? So when it comes to the musaf of any yomtiv, there's a wide-ranging machlokas. the Rabbi Kiva Eger said that women are not chayav to daven musaf in any yom tov. Why? Because a musaf relates to the korban that Klal Yisrael brought in yom tov. All right. So who was participated in this korban? Anybody who gave money once a year, part of the shkolim to the Beis Hamikdash. So halach is that the men were obligated to give the shkolim. The women were not obligated to give shkolim. That's what Rabbi Vegas is there for. Women are not obligated to daven musaf. The Noda Yehuda says another reason. He says that musaf is not usually a tefillah asking for anything. It marks the korban. So normally we say that any kind of davening which asks for anything, that applies to women as well to men, and therefore women should daven along with men. Musaf is different that way. On the other hand, there's a famous prophet called the Sholomation. He lived around the same time as the Chassam Sofer. So he said also, probably a little bit later, in the 1800s, I believe. So he said that women should daven musaf. They're obligated to daven musaf every Yom Tov. Every Shabbos and every Yom Tov. Why? Because he said that all the positive aspects of Shabbos and Yom Tov, women are absolutely obligated to keep. In other words, they can Kiddush. Right? Why is that? Because women are obligated in the Isur Malach of Shabbos and Yom Tov. So we have a rule that just like women are included in the Isur Malach of Shabbos and Yom Tov, they are included in the positive mitzvahs of Kiddush as well. So he suggests that Musaf is a form of Kiddush. It's a form of Kiddush. Because we're expressing the sanctity of the Yom Tov, and therefore the women should be obligated as well. And when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Ravadi Yosef argues that our Musaf is really different. Our Musaf on Rosh Hashanah is really a form of asking for Rachmanis as well. That's what we'll explain in a few minutes. And therefore, it's the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, women should feel obligated to dive into the Musaf as well. One of the most difficult aspects of Rosh Hashanah, and probably rests heavily with the efforts of the Eva Bais of women, is what is the appropriate Matzav Ruach? What is the appropriate mood of Rosh Hashanah? And here we have this ongoing tension between it being a Yom Tov, Yom Tov Tik meals, Yom Tov Tik clothing, and Yom Tov has to have Simcha as well. On the other hand, we have the Pachan, we have the fright that this is the Eimadin, that everything which is precious to us is being determined on Rosh Hashanah. But that's the fact. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a strange day, a day that is a day of Simcha and the same day of Pachan, and the two pull at each other. That's why the Gemara says, why is there no Halal on Rosh Hashanah? Shouldn't the Yom Tov? Should have a halal like any other Yom Tov, as the Gemara says. So the Gemara says no halal because too much pachad. Because how can you say halal when you have the Sifrei Chaim opened in front of us? So on the same day, we have to develop these two ideas: a sense of pachad and a sense of simcha. Rosh Hashanah has both ideas. The Shofar is this mournful davening to Rabbeinu Shalom, a soulful cry to the Rabbeinu Shalom, an inarticulate davening to Rabbeinu Shalom, inarticulate because we're at our wit's end, and it's also the trumpet sound to cornet the Rabbeinu Shalom. So the shofar carries both. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, when he used to blow shofar, it was a tremendous amount of simcha. Rav Kook, when he blew shofar, it was also with a great sense of majesty and a great sense of simcha. The fact is the Shofar includes both themes. So it's very hard to put them together. And that's one of the challenges of Rosh Hashanah. So parents who are clearly responsible, and maybe women even more than men, for the mood of the Matzav Ruach of the home, so that's one of the great challenges. And on one hand, to have a Simchas Yom Tov, certainly after davening, after Musaf in the afternoon, we can focus more on Simchas Yom Tov. Because in Ezra, when the Jews came in the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, the Jews came to Ezra they were building the second Beis Hamikdash, and the Jews were full of problems and difficulties. We had intermarried, and we weren't sharing Shabbos properly. So Ezra called all the Jews together in his Rosh Hashanah, and after he laced into them, then he said, "Ichlu mashman u'shesumam takim ki chedvas Hashem u'uzcham." He said, "The morning of Rosh Hashanah is din, is tachan. After we finish davening, so then we should be filled with a sense of happiness, a sense of simcha. Ichlu mashman u'shesumam takim. Go home and have yom tzitzik meals." So how do we put the two together? So there are many suggestions. One suggestion is that our simcha is that we are negotiating with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a tremendous privilege. It's to be judged by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who else gets a yearly judgment by the Ribbono Shel Olam? So that's a tremendous privilege. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, and that expresses such great concern for every individual that can give a sense of simcha. Just having that kind of attention, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a day of davening, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the tool of the shofar, that we can come to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Baruch Hu listens to our tefillas. So that gives us a sense of privilege and a sense of simcha. But that's a very tough thing. So we try to nurture the mood. Perhaps we can understand this. And this is particularly important again for the way that women approach the Yom and the Yom. Gemara says that the davening of Yom and the Yom is based on the davening of women, right? Rosh Hashanah, Nifkida, Sarah, Rachel, Vechana. Right? Our whole the laning of Rosh Hashanah is Sarah Imenu's successful davening with Ribbono Shel Olam in the birth of Yitzchak, and the Haftorah is Chana's davening for Shmuel, and the Haftorah of the second day is Rachel Mivakor al Bonah. So the Gemara explains, why do we focus on Sarah? If we were designing the davening, the laning of Rosh Hashanah, so we would laying the Parsha Emor, Tzkiya Shofar. We would, if we wanted to discuss Bria Sa'olam, Hamlachas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, coronating God, so we would lay gracious. That's what greater sense of Malchus is than creation, right? If we were thinking about it, so we would lay a Parsha about the Rishon of Ezra. So Chazal explained that when they were thinking about what we should lay in Rosh Hashanah, they said, well, we have a tradition, we have a Masorah, that the Ribbono Shel Olam responded to Sarah's davening in Rosh Hashanah. The Kadosh Baruch Hu responded to Rachel's davening in Rosh Hashanah, to Chana's davening in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, Chazal said, if that's the case, you have to make this the centerpiece of davening, and this apparently is a way in which we're supposed to take inspiration from the rest of davening. What does it mean? The Kodesh Baruch Hu responds to everybody in Rosh Hashanah. Right? So why do they make a big deal about Sarah, Rachel, and Chana? So Meiri says that when the Kodesh Baruch Hu responded to Sarah, Rachel, and Chana, the point Chazal are making is that the Kodesh Baruch Hu responded to their davening. It's not that the Kodesh Baruch Hu simply added up their mitzvahs and their chavos. So what was the unique aspect of Chana's davening? What was unique about Chana's davening? Is different than the way that we usually daven.
She wasn't actually
What was that?
She wasn't actually
speaking. So she was, at that point, she was so aggravated that she was just mouthing the words. And that's why we daven belachash. Right? Then?
Well, what's unique about her davening was that she realized at that point that there was no place else to turn. She had nowhere else to go.
Right? That's one of the great insights is that if you remember, the Navi says that, Navi tells the story, right, that Penina and Chana came up with Elkanah every single year, right? And the Navi tells the story that they would come to Shiloh every year. and that every year the Gemara fills in the details that Penina had children, and that was a source of great aggravation to Chana. And you can imagine that not only did Chana want to have children, but she was in a situation where her husband's second wife was having children. Right? We often come across this when a young couple is trying to have children, so that often is a source of aggravation. But when they're in a neighborhood where everybody's having children, it's a source of greater aggravation. You can imagine, not just being in a neighborhood, in your own home, so Penina is having, Baruch Hashem, many children, and Chana is pining away for a child. So the Navi tells the story that it was in one particular Rosh Hashanah that Chana came to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and Kadosh Baruch Hu answered it. What was different than Rosh Hashanah? So the Navi tells one line, which is that Elkanah says to his wife, "Why are you so bothered? Hello, anochi tov. I think may esibon. Am I not better than 10 children?" It's a very strange thing that of all the different events to tell us, so it tells us this one conversation that the husband and wife had. So many mafreshim said, I once heard this originally from Rabbi Meir Baber of Sholem Gold. That was Rabbi Hanof, was Rabbi Mosemson in France for many years. Many Sfarim have it since. That what happened over here is that apparently every year she was very aggravated. And every year she would come to base it, to Shiloh, and she would daven. And that year, apparently, it got to the point, and her husband was so upset by the upsettedness of Chana that he said to her, almost say, enough already, right? And he said, look, you have me, and I'll take care of you. And isn't our relationship better than having a full home? So what happened then is Chana realized that her husband, as we would say now, didn't get it. Right? That all these years, so she did take solace in the fact that she was suffering together with her husband. That her husband wanted her to have a child as well. That her husband was dabbing together with her. And then all of a sudden, this one year, when her husband said, but do you really need this? Right? Isn't enough already? So then she felt so alone like she never felt before. And then so then when she came to the Ribbono Shel Olam on that Rosh Hashanah, she knew that she had to put all of her kochos in her davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Until that point, so in her mind, she was davening, her husband was davening, other people were davening. So it's a different kind of tefillah. But when you come to Ribbono Shel Olam and you believe that everything depends on your davening, you're the only one who feels the sense of pain that you have, so then it's a different kind of davening. Rosh Hashanah, we come to Ribbono Shel Olam and we say there, and we understand this is Hinei Haaretz Olam. This is Hayom Yavam Mishpat. Here, we're davening for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything depends on our davening. What's going to happen, Bez Hashem, all the things that we want for the upcoming year, depend on the time we have with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Rosh Hashanah. It's a different kind of davening. So a person can come to that madrega, that depth of pain, and that depth of bitachon, that how we daven, how we confront the Ribbono Shel Olam, everything depends, I'll call and totally be, that's a different kind of davening. I remember many years ago, probably 20 years ago, I once took a couple who were considering very advanced fertility, and I took them to one of Rav Moshe's children. So Rav Reuven said that his father, Rav Moshe, whenever he counseled couples, so he would always say, after you've tried everything, wait 6 months. I forget it was 6 months till, I think 6 months till they would try very, very advanced methods. So he explained, because once you've tried everything, then it's a different kind of davening. As long as there are tipulim that are available, things that are within the mainstream of what's happening, so then you daven the Rebbe Shlom and you say, well, one of these, between the Rebbe Shlom and the doctor, something should work out. But once one's exhausted, everything which is available to us, so then it's a different kind of davening. Then for those 6 months, the davening is entirely dependent on the Rebbe Shlom. So that's one of the ideas that we have to work on ourselves and think about as we're preparing during the end of El towards Yom Ne'irom. But I was thinking about, there's another unique aspect to the davening of Chana, which made this tefillah different than other tefillahs. In the way that what she asked for, when she finally expressed herself to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So what did she say? You remember? What was the bargain? What was the deal? Right. If you give me a child, I'll give him back to you. Right. She says to him, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that if you'll give me a child, so he will come to serve you. Minasata la'amosecha la'amoscha. Remember, zera anashim unisativ la'shem kol yemei chayav. Right. So what was Chana saying at this point? Right. So Chana got to a point, got to a madrega, where she was able to say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I want this child, and I want this child in order to serve you better, in order to give greater cover to Hashem. So in terms of Elkanah and Penina, so he has a family, she has a family, but that's an unusual madrega to reach. So she got to a point, she was able to reach this point that she was able to daven for the Ribbono Shel Olam, for Kol Shemayim. Right? It's an unusual madrega. That's the madrega that we're trying to reach on Rosh Hashanah. I was thinking that is Nifkida Sarah Rachel Vachana. How is that? Because if we think about Sarah, she also was in that madrega, that she was willing to give Avram Hagar. So she was willing to put Avram's concerns, the Ribbono Shel Olam's concern, to have a nation come out of Avram ahead of Avram. And it was only when Hagar's children, or Hagar's child, turns out to be working against the goals of Sarah, and that's not going to give greater cover to Hashem, that then Sarah gets rid of Hagar. But she was willing to put Hagar ahead of her own. Rachel, the same thing. Rachel had some understanding that she was supposed to, together with Yaakovino, have a nation. She was willing to put Leah, right? She was willing to put that Yaakov should have children. She helped Leah. She put Bilhah ahead of herself. So these three women were women who Kadosh Baruch Hu responded to their davening, because they got to a point where they were davening that if the Ribbono Shel Olam responds to their davening, so then they will. They are the things that they wanted. They wanted because it gave greater cover to Ribbono Shel Olam. So again, it's an unusual madrega, but that's probably what it means. That Rosh Hashanah Nifkida Sarah Chana VeRachel. It means that these kinds of tefillas have a special place in Rosh Hashanah. And why should that be? Why should it be that Rosh Hashanah this davening is more appreciated than any time? It could be that we've explained this in the previous years. This is an idea which personally has meant a lot to me. That I have often had trouble preparing for Rosh Hashanah because the themes of Rosh Hashanah are so hard to really relate to. The idea of being Mamluch HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, I can relate to that idea that we accept things that are happening as coming from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We accept the Kadosh Baruch Hu's sovereignty over us. Right. and different days with different intensity. But what does it mean for me to be mamlech the Ribbono Shel Olam? And how did this happen that the same day is the day of being mamlech the Ribbono Shel Olam, of announcing his kingship, his sovereignty, and that's the day that we get judged? So several years ago, we discussed this on different occasions, I came across an essay by Rav Chaim Friedlander which pulled the ideas together in a way which for me was very meaningful, because then I could relate to some of the ideas. And he pointed out that the idea of coronating a king, the idea of celebrating the anniversary of the king's sovereignty, so that often coincides with the king evaluating the state of the nation. Right? The best example we have is the one anniversary that's mentioned in Chumash is on birthday, Paro, right? And Paro's birthday was the day that they celebrated him being king. What do we know happened on Paro's birthday? What did he do on his birthday? Was having a big party? Was that? Right. So he either pardoned or killed. So what's happening when he pardoned or killed? He determined whether the chief baker or the chief the head of the bar, right, whether they were people he could work with or he couldn't work with. Right. So apparently that's what happens when the king celebrates his birthday, his anniversary of becoming king. He's making an evaluation. He's figuring out the state of his royal entourage, of his palace. So he has to figure out, is the baker worthwhile keeping on? Right? So it's a review of his service. And depending on the review of his service, that determines whether, in that case, he gets reinstated, and whether he gets his position gets reissued. Or, if he can't be pardoned, if he has no place for him, then he gets duly punished. So the celebration of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Malchus is a time, and we can even go a step further. If the Ribbono Shel Olam bothered to share this with us, it must be for some reason. In other words, the story of the baker and the Saramashkin wasn't an essential part of the story. Essential for us to know that they were in prison, and essential for us to know that Yosef interpreted the dreams correctly, and that one got killed and one survived. Right? That it happens to be on Paro's birthday, that he's making a party, that he's evaluating things, that's sort of extra information which at first glance has no purpose and no use for us. So the Ritzvah says it has an importance because it gives us an insight into the way kings work. And if we have an insight into the way kings work in this world, then we can understand the way Kadosh Baruch Hu works. One of the Svarim points out that one of the problems that we have in Rosh Hashanah is we don't have a concept of kings. We don't know the concept of monarchy, the concept of royal palace, the pachad and the grandeur of a king. So we talk about coronating the king, we think in terms of the fairy tales that we've read, we think of descriptions, but they actually have the sense of grandeur when the king walks through, entirely lost in the 20th century. The whole approach to leadership is so much different, right? We probably have seen the past president's pictures many more times in shirt sleeves than we have surrounded, or maybe a few times surrounded by some Secret Service agents, but a sense of grandeur stepping out of aircraft one. So that then you get a little bit of sense of Malchus, right? But and even the kings that the president meets with always in sort of dressed down. So this sense of grandeur we've lost, the idea of being mamlech the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's why it's hard for us to appreciate what it means to think of a Kadosh Baruch Hu as a melech. So, but the Torah gives us some insight that on a day of Malchus, so that's also a review. So that brings the ideas of Rosh Hashanah together. Because we are the the subjects of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So on the day when the Kadosh Baruch Hu is celebrating his anniversary, that what that really means is that we are evaluating, or being evaluated, is how useful we are to the Malchus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So if on Rosh Hashanah we spend time announcing the Malchus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Malchus, and we announce the Malchus of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's part of the Tkiyah Shofar, and we take pleasure and pride with the privilege of being subjects that are close to Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then we are advancing the Malchus of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we have a greater place. So our one of the best ways to daven Rosh Hashanah is to say Malchus. And so we're often very struck on Rosh Hashanah, if we would formulate the davening, we wouldn't have Malchus, Zechronus, and Shofros. We would have a daily Shemoneh Esrei, right? And we would spend a lot of time, we'd have a huge Refeinu, and a huge Baruch Aleinu, and we'd have a huge Shema Koleinu. That'd be if we would be talking in Rosh Hashanah. And our davening, and our davening is the opposite, right? We daven freestyle to the Ribbono Shel Olam Rosh Hashanah, and we ask for things freestyle. But the davening Chazal gave us is a different kind of davening, announcing Kadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus, announcing the Chronos that he has, that when he reviews our service to him, he remembers everything. Shofar is announcing Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence at our Sinai, L'Asad Lovo, when he comes back in times of Mashiach. So what we're really announcing is the most important form of tefillin, Rosh Hashanah, is that we are valuable servants. That it's worth that we have a place in the Ribbono Shel Olam's Malchus. That we will advance the Malchus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So if we will advance the Malchus of Kadosh Baruch Hu, so every bracha Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us will be of greater service to him. He knows that if a person says Malchus and Rosh Hashanah, so that means that when the Kadosh Baruch Hu blesses us with good health, we'll see it as the Kadosh Baruch Hu's gift. So we'll thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for it. We'll understand that that's coming from him, and then we will channel that bracha into serving Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why Chazal said that when it comes to the Yontif Rosh Hashanah, the best thing is to focus on the Malchus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And by doing so, what we're trying to earn our position as being a valuable and productive subject for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that would indicate that that's one of the things that we have to think about in preparing ourselves for Rosh Hashanah. We mentioned in Shabbos that as time wears on, so Elul has become a much harder period of time to bring to life. But probably because of reasons of busyness and pace. But one of the ways that we prepare ourselves for Rosh Hashanah and prepare ourselves to the Mamlech, the Ribbono Shel Olam, is by thinking the Cheshbon HaNefesh as to what is our how can we contribute more and more to the Ribbono Shel Olam's Malchus to Kavod Shemayim, to giving greater kavod to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that depends on every person's, a person has to see his own strength and her strength and their own tafkid and what their various roles are. And that's, we'll close the way that we began, that if a woman is Baruch Hashem busy taking care of children, either for the entire day or for part of the day, or has to work the davening around the child care that's available. So that is not really a distraction from one's davening. As he began, that too is a form of davening. That the Ribbono Shel Olam sees that we are davening is not only verbal davening, but even more so, and this is, perhaps is, becomes more dramatic for women than for men, is that our thinking in Rosh Hashanah is seeing our expression to the Rebbeinu Shel Rosh Hashanah is that we thought about what our tafkidim are, what our roles are, what our jobs are, right? And we are doing those tafkidim with excitement and with happiness and with a sense of privilege and with our focus on how we'll give greater kavod to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So when a person is raising children of any age, our focus is how we will raise these children so they'll have more Yir Shemayim, how they'll be Rechavadik young men and young women, how if the Kodesh Baruch Hu bless us with those children, so then that is the Matana, that defines the Tafkin that we have. That job is one that supersedes everything else which is going on. But on Rosh Hashanah, that's what we're saying to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. On Rosh Hashanah, we're turning to the Shem Baruch Hu and saying that we're carrying out the tafkidim that we see as being ours. We're carrying them out to the best of our ability, and we're asking the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that if these are the tafkidim He gave us, that's the tafkid that He wants from, that's the job, that's the role that He wants from this this subject. Kodesh Baruch Hu expects different things from different subjects, and Kodesh Baruch Hu expects different responses based on different brachas that we have. Rosh Hashanah is when we see ourselves as sort of being evaluated. And Rosh Hashanah is the time when we turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu, like Chana turned to Kodesh Baruch Hu and said that we're trying to see ourselves as advancing Kodesh Baruch Hu's covenant, Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence in this world. So if a person on Rosh Hashanah is busy with their tafkin, that's what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that's the best kind of tefillah. That's the best way of being mamlech the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, to say that I'm being mamlech Kodesh Baruch Hu by taking care of the role that I understand that Kodesh Baruch Hu blessed me with. So I think these are some of the ideas we should think about before Rosh Hashanah. Again, we discussed the mitzvah to tekiyas shofar, and perhaps that Musaf has a special role for women on Rosh Hashanah, that the Matzav Ruach, the mood of the day and of the days that we're approaching, those are moods that I created at home, and that as we think about preparing ourselves for Rosh Hashanah, so Chazal wanted us to focus on the special aspects of the Tfilah Sesora Rachel and Chana in particular, that her Tfilah was one which we can think about in Rosh Hashanah as one where a person realizes that everything is totally, everything depends on the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, everything depends on that Yom HaDin, and in addition that that we have to work on ourselves to get to the point where we're able to daven to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, as we say, Zecheinu L'Chaim, V'Lachavis V'Chaim, L'Man Cholikim Chaim, because we want the blessings that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us and will give to us, because through them we'll be able to recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu to a greater extent and give greater recognition to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Any questions? Yeah.
The Ikir of Slichos is saying, what's that?
No,
I'm saying, I'm not sure if it's worth driving yourself, putting your schedule.
I can understand that's a good time for you to spend more time.
Yeah, there are two parts, the answer to your question is yes, but you also realize that the main part of Slichos is saying the 13 midos of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, right? And that one can only say with the community, and one should only say that probably in the morning, right? So everything else, all the other parts of Slichos are piyutim, right? They're all beautiful poetry in order to inspire us to say the 13 Midos of Rachman again. Right, so therefore, if a person would say slichos without the 13 Midos of Rachman, I just don't know if that's the best way to spend one's time. And that's what I mean. It's they're very, very difficult to work through.
The alternative is doing something mundane. That it would
okay, yeah, well, that's all. That's true, right? Right. But the alternative would be which you just put it into its proper place in the context. That they're very pretty. I think it's obviously better to say less and to know when saying that kind of davening. So, and but I wouldn't attribute to it a sense of importance that would push away the other things that are important.
Is it important for women to say Masechta before they hear shofar?
No. You can play either way. Whatever works out better. Right, but one shouldn't feel that when a certainly should not feel that one has to have musaf before shofar.
So what point can a woman say
musaf till sunset? Right, musaf till sunset. Yeah.
In terms of being
if it's anything of substance, if it's after one's davened and something of substance, yeah, should be preferably after some davening took place and then with kiddush, yeah. Yeah.
What's the idea in terms of not talking if you are in shul during lesef? Like my husband doesn't, but if I'm involved in childcare, so you're in shul and you're hearing the kolos,
right,
the tzibur, right, but talking.
Right. So I always announce in shul that childcare takes precedence over the issue of talking. In other words, the most important thing is not to talk between the bracha and the first tones. Right? That's very important because the bracha relates to those tones. And then there's an idea of lesser importance that the brachas relate to all of the tones, right? Which we, strictly speaking, we over-dramatize, because that way people stay quiet for the rest of davening. We do over dramatize it. Once you've heard the first 30 kolos, so then the issue of relating the bracha to the kolos has been, for the most part, exhausted. I would say it still is a value. I'm not saying we're not making it up, I'm not fabricating it. There is a value, not to say words. The brachas relate to all of the tones, but if the way it works, practically speaking, that if my child needs attention, if I don't address the child, then there's going to be a bigger interruption coming. Right? So usually addressing a child is the path of least interruption. And that's one I should choose.
So those of us who have babysitters on Rosh Hashanah for the student week this year, is it better for us to just leave our kids at home with a babysitter and be able to do all the davening because we'll be able to do that? Or rather, cut our davening short so that we can use the dinner to go into shul to have a shofar?
If one has a babysitter because it's Tuesday and Wednesday, and every Tuesday and Wednesday one has a babysitter, so one might as well be in shul. Right? I don't think if a person doesn't have a babysitter, so that's the other issue of how far you go to get one. But if a person has one coming to the house anyways, so then it also depends on the age of the children. If they're very young children, so whatever one will provide for them in terms of Rosh Hashanah, one will be able to provide in the afternoon.
When you say talking about the quiet matzah, or you're talking about like the shliach tzibur, things like Matan and Sukkah, and like the Matan is a Hornos Shofar, certain Matan Shemona Esrei that we say, right? But then like certain parts that you think are like the big parts of davening,
yeah,
are not.
Right. So in terms of
which parts are like, which parts do you consider
the quiet Shemona Esrei? In terms of what, when I mentioned that Musaf and Rosh Hashanah may be more important than other Yom Tov, that means the quiet. Right now, in terms of the Sanatokef and the future like that, that should be evaluated on a inspiration level. In other words, a person.
Is it okay to say those if you're not in shul, I think?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. A person will be inspired by saying the Sana Tokif or by hearing it from, being together with the Tzimus, and that should be a very important driving force in making decisions. Better than. Well, it depends on the answer is yes. I'm not sure what the other need to nima. The question is better to be there for the first 30 or the last 30? So the first 30 are more important for that reason. One could argue otherwise. One could argue here the 30 that are wrapped around davening. So the answer is no. That it's better to be the first 30 that are related to the first bracha. All right. I'm not sure what other decision has to be made, but yeah, that's the answer to that question. Right. So then, right.
That's a primary question. If you're going to come to the end, did you have to make it on bracha, or can you rely that you've made it on everybody in the community who might ever come into shul?
That's a good question. If a person, if you haven't heard the bracha, the Shmo Kol Shofar, so then you would make your own bracha the first time you hear it. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. And it's a very busy time. I appreciate you coming out.
Yes. My brother just got engaged. And thank you. He wanted to